You are dialed into the Success Line podcast, the place where you get a chance to phone a friend, call in a lifeline, and ask a favor of someone who's been there and done that. This is real people getting one-on-one coaching with Success Entrepreneurship Editor and New York Times bestselling author, Rory Vaden. Here's Rory.
Hey there, it's Rory Vaden, co-founder of Brand Builders Group and your host of The Success Line. What you're about to hear is a real-life conversation with somebody that I am just meeting about the actual struggles they are facing each and every day in their life and their business. You and I are going to meet them at the same time. We're going to have an honest talk and then stick around at the very end, and I'll do a debrief and a recap highlighting some of the biggest takeaways that you can apply to your own life. Let's get started. Welcome back to the Success Line. Today, I am joined by a new friend. Her name is Justine. I know virtually nothing about her, and I'm going to learn about her just as you do. But we're here to talk about helping her grow her business, grow her impact, and help her help more people in what she's doing every day as a real life entrepreneur. So Justine, welcome to the Success Line.
Thank you so much, Rory. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So tell us just like a little bit about, you know, you and who you are and where you're from, because you're not from the U.S., which is so cool. So we want to know where are you at? And then, just a little of your personal background and then a little bit about your business.
Sure. So I was originally born in Johannesburg, South Africa, and we moved to Australia when I was 11. We literally came from nothing. So I had to hustle and grow up from a very young age. And It led me into a branding business and advertising. So I think I had to get my hustle on. And now today what I do is I brand empires for the experience age. So in an age of swiping and tapping, I put a spotlight on brands and bring them to life online and offline, make them look amazing and get attention.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So how long have you been doing this? So you guys are like running a full service digital agency. Yeah,
that's right. Exactly. So anything from like a logo to tagline, to brand website, to product launch, to packaging, like everything. That's pretty much what we do.
When did you start the business?
It's about 7 years old now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes.
I know people cannot see you, but I can see you. But you look too young to have a company that has been around for 7 years old. So that's really it's meant to be a compliment. And I'm so you've been doing it for 7 years. And tell us about your team a little bit. Like how many people do you have? Are you have a bunch of employees? Are they more contractors? Are they full-time, part-time? And then maybe like a sense of the scope in terms of the size of the business, in terms of either revenue or customers or, you know, something like that.
Sure. So we're a boutique agency, and basically We've got a smaller team because I want to work with the best. So I always say, you know, it's about the talent and it's about the drive. And I think if you've got a team that is full of drive and passion, then you can do amazing things. So I've kept it small. I've kept it to a level where, you know, I can control it. And also we work with a lot of boutique clients. So it's not a huge team, but I've done it like that on purpose.
Uh-huh. And so then you're just like farming out various work for your clients. You're like finding resident experts and vendor partners to basically help them get stuff implemented.
We do what we're good at. And then the stuff that we are not experts in, like, I don't think you can ever be an expert. I think that you've always got to be learning. But in terms of search engine optimization, we've got strategic partners that we work with. Yes.
Uh-huh. All right. And then, so who is your perfect client? Like, who are the kind of clients that you've been serving so far? And are they in like an industry or a geographic region or a certain type of company or size of company or a certain stage company? Or is it just kind of like all over the place?
Sure. So I absolutely love building personal brands. I think that's where we really shine. So I have been working a lot with speakers and also real estate agents, like global enterprises. But I love making people magnetic. So I think definitely personal brands, you know, people who want to become an icon in the world, leave a legacy. Those are my ideal clients. And we literally, a lot of our work is referral, believe it or not. So, you know, it's taken me a long time to get to this point. I've worked really hard to do really great work with my team. But those are my ideal clients, the people who want to create impact in the world. So personal brand speakers, just iconic people who are amazing.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. Well, we're very familiar with that world, and you know, I've been a professional speaker since I was 17 years old, and been in the industry myself a long time. So I know a lot of the folks, and I, you know, they certainly we need the help as speakers, authors, small business owners. You mentioned real estate agents. I think you know one of the things that I've seen that a lot of those type of people struggle with is that their expertise typically far outweighs their brand presence. And absolutely. That like they're really good at what they do, but their online presence is something that they're more embarrassed of. And so, you know, we work with a number of clients who fit that type of a profile and see that kind of a thing. So, anyway, so this is great. So I love this. You've been hustling, 7 years, you're at it, you're making moves. You're super clear on what you're all about and up to. So what's your question for the success line, or like, what are some of the biggest things that you're focused on right now?
I want to know, you know, in the tough days that you feel like, because everyone goes through that as an entrepreneur, right? So the mornings that you are so stressed out that you, because I mean, we're everything, you know, especially when you're starting out a business. Like I remember I was the doctor, I was the secretary, I was the counselor, I was the psychologist. Mm-hmm. Like what, you know, what makes you like, what makes you tick? What gives you the drive to live another day? As an entrepreneur, what keeps you going?
Are you going through a time right now where sometimes you wake up and you're facing some of that stuff?
No, so I think it's for a lot of the clients that I work with that are starting up, because we get a lot of people who come to us and are like brand us, and but they go through those days where they're like, can I really do this? Like, can I really reach the next level in my career? So it's your question, your answer to my question is actually going to have domino effect on a lot of people. So I would love to know that.
Do you feel pretty on fire about what you're doing right now? I mean, like for you personally.
I do. I absolutely love what I do. Like, but I mean, you still go through the hard days. Like I'm very authentic. What you see is what you get, but you do, you go through the days where, you know, you are in the office and the lights go off and you're like, there's no one else around because that's how you work. But I do love what I do. I'm extremely passionate and I am on fire with it. I'm lucky.
Yeah. Well, that's part of why I asked, because I don't get the sense, Justine, that that's not a real question that you're struggling with. You seem to be very on fire about what you're doing. You don't seem like you're struggling with motivation. And I think a lot of it is because you're so aligned in something, you know, that you are passionate about. And so you wake up every day and, you know, that's, I think that effectively is the answer to that question, is that there's no such thing as an easy road. There's only such a thing as a passionate destination. And if you have a passionate destination, then you're willing to endure the hard road. If you don't have a passionate destination, then you're not going to endure the difficult road. But a lot of people spend time looking for an easy road, and it's like, don't waste time looking for the easy road. Spend time figuring out what is your passionate destination and lock in on that. And so I get the sense for you that that's not the real thing that you personally are struggling with, or like the biggest challenge. So what do you feel like is the biggest challenge for you personally, like in your business, what are you most focused? Like what keeps you up at night every day, you know, as an entrepreneur, up at night, every night going, you know, gosh, like this is the problem that I need solved.
Okay. So I am extremely hard on myself. I'll never, ever celebrate my wins ever. I'm always like, okay, what's next? Even when I achieve my goals. So I'm literally like, I've been told I have to be kinder to myself. So I guess like, how do you do that as an entrepreneur? Because I'm really tough on myself.
And you've always been like that?
Always, always, always.
Basically what you're saying is you achieve something and that it's always immediate, the next thing and the next thing and the next thing.
Absolutely. And it doesn't matter like how big it is or how great it is. I'm always like, you got to do better, like not good enough. So it's like the self-talk of like, I'm just extremely hard on myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I that is something that, is not all that uncharacteristic, I would say, also of ultra performers and high performers. I mean, you know, you look at a Michael Jordan or, you know, somebody like that, and you could take a business example, sports example, they usually push themselves pretty hard. But I think, to me, the question I would have for you in that regard, is how do you know when you're there? Like, at what point, and I think, and I'm bringing this up not only because I think it's irrelevant to you, but for me and for everybody, is it's so easy to get trapped into, I wake up, I hustle, I go to work, I push, I stress, I move, I hit a deadline, I set a new goal, I push, I hustle, I stress, and we don't actually sit back and ever stop for a second to go, how am I going to know when I'm there, or where is there? What am I, like, at what point would I actually grant myself the grace of not having to do that? Or am I okay with, and am I determining that for the future of my life, that's just who I'm going to always be? Have you thought much about that? You know, how do you know when you're there?
No, I've never. And how do you know when you're there? How do you know? You know what I mean? Like, how do you actually know as an entrepreneur when you're there? Because like, I know I've got a vision board. I've got huge things I want to do. I want to help like thousands of people, but it's all like, what happens after you do that? So what do you think that moment is? Like, how do you know when you're there? Do you know that you're there? Rory, like, do you know?
Yeah. So, I think there is very much different for everybody, right? So like, you know, each person's definition, I think, of success is different. But here is a tactical way that I have found, that works really well for a lot of people. And this was something that I did early on. Okay. So, basically, it starts with money, just because money is a concrete mechanism which we can all understand, right? And so it's not about money, but the nice thing about money is it's kind of like, you know, it's very pragmatic. You can wrap your mind around it, whereas something like impact, not only is it harder to kind of understand, it's harder to measure. And also for most people, like when we want to make impact in the world, it does have no end, right? It's like, you know, whereas the thing that's interesting about money. So, and I, you know, to share a little bit of my story, I was raised by a single mom, and, I was born in a trailer park. You know, we never lived on the street, but we were pretty dang close. I got into a direct sales company when I was in college, because to me, it represented this idea of being paid what I was worth, and being able to be paid for my results was very exciting. I didn't need someone else's permission to say, oh, I was worth a raise, or, you know, and I didn't come from a family that I could get into an Ivy League university or something. I didn't have uncles who were heads of companies, or people that were, you know, friends of the family that were right. And so it was like, okay, I need to find something, which is what entrepreneurship is, right? Entrepreneurship is the ultimate level playing field. Well, It can be. I guess I wouldn't call it a level playing field. Some people certainly come in with a set of advantages, but it is a place where you can determine your own destiny, regardless of where you start. And I did that, and I was really driven by the money for a long time. My wife and I, we were multimillionaires before we were 30 years old. And it was really interesting because, I was $50,000 plus in debt. And then, I went from there in my early 20s to, we started our business when she was 22, I was 23 years old. And so we were, pretty well off, certainly by my family's standards and where I grew up before I was 30. And I realized something in my own life and in the life of other people that money is very motivating when you don't have it. but in many cases, you reach a point that money is not that much more motivating. Unless you are consumed with the idea of I must have private jets and private islands and I must own sports teams and countries, that once your house is paid off and you your cars are paid off and you have once you have no debt, I have found that it doesn't take that much money to feel quote unquote rich. Most of what feels rich is being able to go to a restaurant and order whatever you want to eat or buy whatever car you want or to, go shopping at a store and not really like look at the price tag. And, I remember my mom having to pump to the penny at the gas station because it was like she only had it was like $8.37 is all she could put in the gas tank for that week. And, so for a lot of people, they think of wealth and they think of riches as like, oh, private jets and sports teams and like luxurious. But for most of us, it's more of like being able to live our daily life without having to, think about it. And just most of those are not certainly not $1 million decisions. Most are not even tens of thousands of dollars decision other than like a house, which, is a big one, and a car. But for most of us, our daily life is, you feel more wealthy by being debt free. Mm. Like that has been my experience, is you feel more wealthy by being debt free. Sorry. So this is a little bit of a long way around to the answer, but I wanted to make sure, at least to share in my story, the biggest transformation in my personal life was not making more money. It was being debt free. The moment I was debt free, the pressure of feeling like I had to make more money, the pressure of being like, I have to do this for money. I have to make this sale. I have to work till midnight. I have to like go, 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 go is released. And so the freedom that so many of us are seeking is not the result of accumulating this massive pile of money. It is the result of breaking free of the shackles of having money going out the door every month to debtors, and not having any margin because it's all gone. But even if you make $3,000 a month, if you have no debt, that $3,000 piles on top of itself really, really fast. So, there's kind of using money to answer your question. There are two key checkpoints financially in life, at least for me and the people that we've profiled, we've studied, we've learned from. So one is, what is the shortest distance between now and debt free? Because that changes everything. Is when you don't owe people money, you can literally do whatever you want. You can buy whatever you want. You can have whatever you want as long as you have the money. Here's another thing. So when we started our first company, I had a 2001 Chrysler Sebring with, it was like an old man's car, for lack of a better word. And, I drove this thing for 15 years. It was over 15 years, but I made a decision. The only car I ever wanted, that I ever really wanted, was a Bentley. That was the only car I ever wanted. You know, every other car, it's like, there, to me, there's Bentleys and then there's everything else. And it's like, who cares? And so, you know, my wife used to even, and my friends used to give me such a hard time because, you know, we have an 8-figure business and 8-figure in annual revenues. And I'm driving around this 2001 Bentley, like the windshield wipers didn't work. Like one of the windows wouldn't roll up, and it had a convertible, but like you'd push the automatic convertible and it didn't have enough power to get up. So I had to like manually push it back anyways. And people are like, why are you doing this? It's 'cause it was like, well, I'm not going to get a new car until I can buy the car I want. And I'm not going to get the car I want until I could pay cash for it. And I literally drove into the Bentley dealership in my Chrysler Sebring. And I literally think they were like, my 2001 Chrysler Sebring, and they had to be gone. There's no way this kid is for real. And then, you know, I paid cash for a Bentley.
That is the best story. That is one of the best stories I've ever heard. I love that so much.
Well, and it's funny because to me, that moment represented a big transfer. You know, that was about, you know, financially about the biggest and most impossible thing that a kid, you know, that came from where I came from, could think of. It was interesting. A year later, I sold the Bentley. Now, part of it was because we were having a second child, and a Bentley is not the most optimal place to store two car seats, or even one other person for that matter. But it was another thing that happened, which was interesting, is that somebody broke into our house. Someone broke into our house and they stole all of my wife's mom's jewelry. So my wife, AJ, who's our CEO. So she died, not my wife, my wife's mom died when AJ was just 15 years old. And she died of cancer. And the only thing that AJ had of her mother's memory was her mom's jewelry. And
terrible.
And somebody broke into our house, and we have a pretty awesome house. You can see our backyard behind me. You can. I'm talking to Justine. You listening can't see anything on the podcast. Thank you. But we don't have much nice stuff in the house. We're not, you know, other than the car. I was convinced that somebody saw us driving around and followed us home to our house. Wow. And was convinced that because we had a Bentley in this home, we must have a bunch of nice stuff in the home. We really don't have a lot of nice stuff. Like, people make fun of us all the time because of the TV in our living room is also like 15 years old and it's very small. And people are like, why don't you get a nicer TV? We don't watch a ton of TV. But I realized that it was like, wow, this thing that I wanted to achieve was now bringing me negative attention that I wasn't interested in. And it might've cost my wife the only real connection that she had with her mom, who died when she was 15 years old. And it was like, I don't want this anymore. So I say all that to say the first check mark to me is being debt free. Being debt free changes everything. Being debt free, at least for me, will create, and for several of our clients that we have coached, will create more of a feeling of wealth than just accumulating more money. The second one is to find your number, Justine. So we call this finding your number. So what does this mean? So this is actually an exercise that you could do. We could do this. Well, we probably can't do it live right now, but what you do is you go, in order to retire in style, like the way that I would want to retire, you go, here's the car I'd want to drive. Here's how much. What you do is you create a budget. So you know how, like, most people who create a budget, they create a budget for today, like basically based on, you know, here's how much money I'm making. And that's a good practice. That's a good practice. And certainly for an entrepreneur like you, to scale a business, you should be running a budget every year, and you need to have a process every fall where you create a budget for next year. But what almost nobody does is create a future budget, like a dream budget, to go, if I were living my perfect life, this is the same mistake people make with their schedule. People make a schedule. We're big fans of schedules, like plan out your week and blah, 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 blah. Fine. That's all great. But what almost nobody does is create a dream schedule of what do I want my perfect life to look like? That's very different than what does my life need to look like next week. So you do the same thing here with your budget as you go, all right, how much money would I literally spend every month, like to where money was no object for me? I could go out to eat as much as I wanted. I would have some house that I would want. And if the house were paid off, then it wouldn't even matter. As long as the house was paid off, it's like, okay. And what you do is you map this out and you go, okay, like here's my number. Here is the monthly expenses that I would incur if I had my ideal life. And typically the biggest part of that would be a mortgage payment, a house, right? And if you really have like lavish taste and you want multiple properties, you would have it. And of course there's people who do real estate and real estate investing that would say, well, you should have debt for your house and debt for something. That's fine. Like what, take the house, aside but for me, I was like, okay, we're going to have a paid for house. And then it's like, you come up with all these things and you'd be shocked. It's not as much as you think. For example, $20,000 a month in expenses is a pretty friggin' luxurious lifestyle. And that is only, I'll say only, which I know it's all a frame of reference. But that's $240,000 a year. All right. So that would mean, gosh, at $240,000 a year, I could, it's like your dream life. Now for you, it might be $1 million a year. For someone, it might be $50,000 a year. For someone, it might be $5 million a year. The point is, most of us are running a race and we have no idea where the finish line is. And so we get up and we just push and stress and we don't even know. It's like we're chasing something. We don't even know what it is. So take the time to sit down and define what that is and go, gosh, my ideal lifestyle would be this. Sometimes when people do this, they actually realize that they're there and they could totally live a different lifestyle. Now, if you love working and stuff, I'm a big fan of working, right? Like I do all this stuff for success and it's like, I love this. But it's knowing what your number is. And then specifically, so here's the real kicker. So let's just say, I'll tell you what mine was. Okay. Let me just give you a general example here. Let's say it was $1 million a year. All right. If you wanted to live a lifestyle and go, I want to make $1 million a year. Then the key is to go, how much money do I have invested to where my investments throw off enough in interest that they cover all my lifestyle expenses? So that's a way of thinking about it, is to go, all right, I'm using this for rough math. Let's say it was $1 million a year. Well, that means if you had $10 million invested and you could get 10%, average of 10% return on that 10 million every year, then the 10 million invested would throw off $1 million a year, which means you have retired yourself. Like you have enough money coming, and there's other forms of income. It could be, real estate income. It could be royalty income. A lot of what we do at Brand Builders Groups, we help people get book deals and, information products and stuff like that. It could be, passive income, like, direct sales or something, or it could be investment income. So you have a pile of money either invested or you have these streams coming off. And once they equal the amount that, it would take to retire yourself, then you are effectively done. You have retired yourself. Let's say it was $20,000 a month. Okay. So that's $240,000 a year. That means you go, okay, I could live pretty happily on $20,000 a month, $240,000 a year, if I could get a 10% rate of return, then that means I would only need $2.5 million invested. $2.5 million at 10% would throw off $250,000 a year, which would cover all of my expenses if I had a $20,000 a month lifestyle. And so you go, wow, what would it take to get $2.5 million invested? So it does a couple things. It gives you a target. Like it creates a finish line versus just, I'm running on a hamster wheel. I don't really know why. I don't know where I'm going. I'm just running. I'm literally just running. And I think a lot of times people think they're burnt out. And it's not that they're burnt out. It's that there's a hopelessness that comes when you're running and you don't have any idea for how much longer do you have to run at this pace. And they're not realizing that you're in control of your own life and sitting down in any moment going, let me figure this out. Like, how much money do I really need? And nobody does it. And it's like, this doesn't take a year to do it. Like, you can do it in an hour. And you go like, what kind of car would I drive? And either it would be paid for, or if you're not a debt-free person, if you go, okay, it would cost this much. And then what kind of house would I live for in? And it would cost this much. And then I want to go out to eat and it would be this much. And you create your dream budget. There's not the budget that you're going to live on like this month. That's a normal budget. This is a dream budget. And you go, okay, here's what my monthly nut would have to be. And then just using rough math, if you were to divide that by 10, whatever, so if it's, you know, 20,000 a month, you know, take your monthly number, multiply that by 12, that'll give you your yearly number. So that's what I kind of did. 20,000 a month times 10 months or times 12 months is 240,000 for the year. I rounded up to 250. So that's $250,000 a year in expenses. If you divide that by 10%, that gives you your number. $2.5 million, which is the number you need to have invested. And then it's throwing off, assuming you could get 10%, which is in some ways a big assumption, in other ways, not that big of assumption over the course of time. And now you go, I got to get $2.5 million invested. So one, it gives you a target. Now you're not just sprinting with no destination. And a lot of people work very frenetically. They're just kind of like going everywhere all the time as fast as possible, but it's unfocused. And when you have diluted focus, you get diluted results.
Love that.
But when you say, I'm going after this number, the clarity and the focus is power. And so when you sprint after that number, now it's really weird because you might actually, it might be a different story because you might actually end up working harder in the short term because you go, now you're working towards something. The other thing is that people often make sacrifices. You go, you know what? I could drive the Sebring for a couple more years rather than upgrading to a Lexus. I'm going to drive my Sebring for a couple more years because if I drive my Sebring for another 5 years, then I could have my Bentley debt-free. And so it causes you to work in a more focused way, and it causes you to, you might make certain sacrifices. It causes you to make more informed decisions, but in absence of clarity in the future, it's hard to make a definitive decision with a specific intention and to create a strategy. It's like, we can't create a strategy with no end goal in mind. And most people don't. And even most business owners, if you're lucky, I mean, if I had to guess, I would say, I bet only 30% of small business owners. So let's say less than $1 million a year in revenue. I bet only 30% of them even create a budget for a one-year budget. Now, the more your company grows, the more disciplined you get in your financial practices. And so the more sophisticated companies end up planning a 3-year budget, a 5-year budget, a 10-year budget. Toyota was famous for a 50-year. They had a 50-year plan. This is what ultra performers do, but most people do not. And most people don't allow themselves the ability to dream out there in the future, they either would rather just be lazy in the present, or what I would submit is in some ways an equal indulgence, which is to be a workaholic in the present, because they don't have to think. You're just running, just sprinting everywhere all the time. So those are the first two checkpoints: getting debt free, and then knowing what's your number. This would be like your retirement number. So I would encourage you to create a plan for those two things. Do you think you could do that?
Absolutely. I think that was amazing, and I think so many people are going to benefit from that. And that Bentley story was hilarious. Like, honestly, you're the best. How did it feel though? Like when you actually, like, I want to know, what was that feeling like? Because you had worked so hard and you had this plan, but like when you actually bought it and you drove out of the dealership, how did that feel for you?
It was really wonderful. There's been a few moments in my life that have been really, really magnificent. Finding out that we hit number two on the New York Times bestseller list was one of those moments. I came in second at the World Championship of Public Speaking when I was 23. That was more of a bittersweet moment because I was really focused on winning, and I actually thought I had won. It was really, really close. But that was still a really great moment, you know. Yeah. Certainly moving into our house. But here's what I would say: almost every one of those moments trails off over time. And I'll say this: the thrill of buying the Bentley, which was a wonderful feeling. I don't think there's anything wrong with nice things, but I can definitely say it paled in comparison to the guilt I felt, and I don't know if guilt's the right word, but to the hurt that I felt, that even in some way it might have led to my wife losing her mother's jewelry, knowing we'll never get that back. There were a number of circumstances going on in terms of like why I sold it, but it was really realizing, you know, the car, you know, you often put so much stake in this possession or this title, which in some ways I think is really good because it causes you to strive and have something to shoot for and like aim for is really, you know, I think those are good things. But you know, this is what I think it would bring us around to. And this is what I would say is the third checkpoint. You know, I said there's two. One is get debt free. Two is figure out your number. The third checkpoint is when you truly get to the place where you realize another dollar and another possession is not going to bring you more peace or happiness. It really does happen. Like, I know that some of you are like, try me, right? Like you just want to make money. You're like, oh yeah, just try me. Like the people say money doesn't equal happiness. And you're like, try me. and there's really wonderful things, but I'll tell you this. We are far, far, far from, you know, being one of the world's wealthiest people in the world, but we know a lot of the world's wealthiest people. We actually know several billionaires, and the billionaires that are the happiest are the ones who are not paying attention to the money. They're doing it for fun. They're doing it for impact. They're doing it to make the world a better place. And there's nothing like the feeling you get when you serve another person.
I agree.
It's the deepest, richest feeling. And when you get clear on that and you go, wow, another dollar in your bank account isn't actually going to make you feel much different. But if you can help someone, if you can impact someone, if you can serve someone, if you can love on someone, especially in one of their moments of need, that is an incredible feeling. And what's wild about it is even though I have that as the third checkpoint, that one is one that's immediately available to all of us in any moment, regardless of our financial situation, because it's not a money marker. It's a spiritual maturity and an emotional maturity. For me, I was immature and very self-centered, and it took years of doing that and accomplishing thing after thing after thing before I realized, oh my gosh, none of these things are ever going to get me to the feeling. But what will get me to that feeling is helping the person standing next to me. And the more that I focus on helping them, the more my insecurities and fears go away. The more I focus on serving other people, and the more I make the more I shift my focus to their worries, the less I'm focusing on my own. And that checkpoint is immediately available to all of us as an immediate source of true lasting satisfaction. And yet at the same time, something that you never get enough of, but it has nothing to do with money or greed or immaturity or self-centeredness. It's actually a very high level of emotional maturity. And you know, that's the thing I'm still striving for. And, you know, I think all of us should be striving for.
Amazing. It's like, it's been amazing speaking with you. You've just got like, you know, it's different speaking to someone who's actually lived and breathed it and who's come from nothing. Like you can tell the difference because it's a different type of fire and it's like embedded in your soul. But on another note, like, how do you find your why? Because like we've spoken about the, you know, what happens when you get there. So like, how do you define your why? Because you see so many people, like even at points with me, right? Like my why has changed throughout my career. So like, how do you define your why when you're building a company or just in life?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's very tied into this conversation, right? Like my why was achieving these things to prove to myself I was worth it. You know, kids made fun of me because I wore sweatpants to school and I had a shaved head because it was like, we couldn't afford a haircut. Right. So it was just, you know, I wanted Air Jordans. I got Air Jordash, as I always say. And like, and, you know, and I think part of it was like that drove me to be out of deep insecurity. And so, and then you accomplish something. And so it's like, it's the next thing. It's the next thing. It's the next thing. And one day you wake up and you go, man, if nothing thus far has satisfied that, you know, what is going to, and, you know, for me, there's two things. One, I think is being grounded spiritually and a relationship, you know, getting all that figured out. You know, for me, I am very clear on, you know, Christianity and that my identity is not in my, what I do, but who I am, which is that I'm a child of God. And just like my kids could never do anything. My kids could never achieve anything to make me love them more. And if they failed, it would never make me love them less. There's also nothing my kids could ever give me that I want. And there's nothing that they could take away from me that I wouldn't willingly give them. And, you know, at least, you know, for me, the Bible describes God as a father. And so when I became a father, I really understood that, like, whoa, like, you know, that is my identity solely in the fact that I am his. Just like, I get it now, because it's like, I don't want anything from my kids. I'm proud of them and I'm disappointed in them, but I always love them no matter what. And so understanding that parallel helped me kind of connect, you know, above and being like, whoa, God says he feels the same way about me. That's pretty cool. And then the other thing is, I think people get caught up and they ask the wrong question. They say, what's my purpose? And I used, you know, I say that, what's my purpose? What's and I think that's the wrong question, actually. If you ask what's my purpose, you're constantly going to be spinning trying to find it. And I used to do that because, as I mentioned, I was very self-centered. Not selfish, right? But self-centered, meaning the world revolves around me. If you're seeking purpose, if you're seeking happiness, I don't think the best question is to say, what is my purpose or what will make me happy? I think the best question to ask is, how can I help? Who can I help? How can I be useful? As you focus on answering those, you'll find purpose and happiness. But it's in the context of your life and the relationship to others, not something that you find just in context to your own life.
I love it. So amazing.
Justine, Yeah, you are awesome. I went on a bunch of rants to your questions.
Incredible. I'm fired up today. Thank you so much, Rory.
Yeah, well, I'm fired up. Girl, you got the fire. I can see you've got the hustle. You've got everything it takes to be successful and to achieve. You're already doing it. I think, you know, my advice to you would be, don't get so consumed and lost in it that it takes you as long to wake up as it took me to, and I'm not saying you're not, but just holding on to the idea that if you're helping other people, you're already there. And if you just focus on serving other people and you're just doing that, like it's like the richest reward that life has to offer.
You know why I love you, Rory? Because I think like our backgrounds are very similar. And so I really resonate with you. So I can't wait to share this with people. Like, what an amazing interview. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Our pleasure. Thanks. Thank you so much, Justine. We wish you the best.
Thank you so much. Take care. Thank you.
Well, that conversation with Justine went in such a different direction than I originally anticipated it, but what a great conversation and what meaningful discussion. And so as I look back on that and I think about, all right, what are the big takeaways here? I think I would summarize that entire conversation as just being clear on the three most important financial checkpoints in your life. These are the three most important financial checkpoints in your life. And the first is becoming debt-free. Feeling rich, at least for me, and most of the people I know that have been through this, feeling rich happens more as a byproduct of being debt-free than it does as a result of accumulating more and more money. Feeling rich happens more as a byproduct of being debt-free than it does as a result of accumulating more and more money. In fact, for most of the people that I know that are, you know, very wealthy, there comes a point typically in the not too distant future, once they are debt free, that they don't really keep track of money all that closely. I mean, they do. They've got processes and teams and systems and things. It's not like they're not organized about it, but it's not something they're consumed with. It's because it's not the source of happiness, right? Like the number on the page is just a number on a page, and whether there's, you know, 7, 6 zeros or 5 zeros or 6 zeros or 7 zeros or 8 zeros, like literally how is it going to make you feel more different? And in some regards, there's really great things that come with having wealth. And there's a lot of goals financially that we still have that we are aspiring towards and working towards. But the majority of that feeling and the majority of that freedom that we desire and that hope of just not stressing about money is available much sooner than we realize. It's not about being a multi-millionaire or billionaire or 100 millionaire. It's like when you're debt free, you're free of that stress, you're free of that weight, you're free of the bonds, that captivity of just feeling like, oh, I'll never catch up, I'm always behind. So that is a huge checkpoint in your financial journey. The second most important checkpoint is your retirement invested number, you know, your invested number. And, you know, we talk through that mathematics of going, okay, how much do I really need to pay my living expenses once I'm retired without ever tapping in to the principal, right? If I can just have if I can have enough principal invested to where I can live off of the interest, and the interest can give me a livable lifestyle that I feel comfortable with, then you can live forever and never run out of money and never have to work again, because you've got steady income coming in through, you know, the asset distribution, the payouts, or the interest off of your investments. And that's a really great place to be. And it's not about how much. The answer to how much is the right amount totally depends on you and what you want and what kind of lifestyle you need to have and how much debt you're going to have when you get there. I mean, if you don't have any debt when you get there, gosh, it's like you could actually reach that point a lot sooner than most people realize. I mean, I think the mindset, the mentality for so many people, and especially the older generations, was like, I'll work till I'm 65 and then the government will take care of me, right? And the mindset of the entrepreneur is like, I'll work till I get this amount invested and then I'll take care of myself. And it never runs out. It'll go forever. And if you love what you're doing, you're going to keep working anyways and you're going to have fun, but you're not doing it because you have to. You're not doing it because of that stress. And you're not just doing it indefinitely, which is my worry and my fear. For the hustle culture. I'm a fan of the hustle culture. I am the guy who wrote the book, Take the Stairs. I believe in discipline. I believe in hard work, but I don't believe in it being the only thing, that it's the end all be all and that it should go indefinitely. It should not. You have to make short-term sacrifices so that you can have long-term gains, but it doesn't mean that your life should be a chaotic sprint all the time, constantly for the rest of your life, right? That's not life. Like that's just work. So know your number, and having that goal will give you endurance, because you'll be like, okay, I see this. It'll also help you create a strategy, because you'll be able to reverse engineer and back in from there and go, oh, okay. You start making decisions differently about your time, your resources, about your relationships, because you have intention, you have a plan. You're not just running on this endless treadmill for no reason. And then the third, key takeaway, which I think is the most important of all, and the third most important financial checkpoint in your life, is realizing the power of infinite service. It's realizing that, look, no amount of money is ever going to give you fulfillment. No amount of achievements are going to suddenly make you feel worthy, and no amount of possessions are going to eventually give your life meaning. Purpose comes not from saying, what is my purpose? It comes from asking, how can I help? And that feeling is rich, it's deep, it's valuable, it's lasting, it's significant. And the most exciting thing of all is it's immediately available to all of us, regardless of how much money we have made. And so when you get to that moment in your life, it's a financial checkpoint, but it actually has nothing to do with the dollar amount. It's really a level of emotional maturity, of spiritual maturity, spiritual centeredness, is realizing that, you know what? The shortest path to most of the feelings that I seek, happiness, joy, satisfaction, contentment, fulfillment, the shortest path to those things is when I help another person. And by helping another person, I get to experience all those things, regardless of how much money I have in my account or what my job title is or what kind of car I drive or what kind of house I live in. So go out and serve. Embrace that now. I'm not saying don't work hard, and I'm not saying you shouldn't make a lot of money. Don't hear what I'm not saying. I'm saying that money is not going to be the source of this, of meaning and satisfaction and fulfillment and joy in your life long term. But service will be. Helping others will be. Supporting others, encouraging others, putting your life in the context of helping the people around you will be. And that's something that you can do immediately, right now, today, in addition to working hard and saving money and getting debt free and investing. So do both, but know that the end game is all about service.
If you would like to appear on the Success Line, head to success.com/successlineguest to fill out the application form. If you're enjoying the podcast, feel free to rate, review, and most of all, tell your friends. This has been a Success Podcast. Head to success.com/podcast to hear more just like it.